We started North Point. In fact, one of my first men's kind of discipleship group, Sean C., was in when I was at First Baptist Atlanta. And Sean was actually in the first group where I had the guys go and I made them graph or do a chart of their spiritual growth. They had to come back and report to our little group. And it's where I began to discover that it just seems like when people tell their story, they hit on these five things over and over and over. So when we started North Point and we're trying to come up with sort of our model for ministry, I presented this to our original staff. And as we began to share our own story, and I've shared some of this in church, everybody said, you know what, that's kind of my story. You know, there were important people that came along. Somebody taught me to have a quiet time. I remember the first time I went to Metro Bible Study or heard your dad preach, or, you know, it was practical teaching. And then there was this big event in my life. And then I went on a mission trip. So everybody said, you know, basically these five things just keep coming round and round and round and really are, do seem to be pillars of our development. So we asked the question then as a staff, if that's kind of how God works anyway, is there a way to create a church model or a group of environments around those five things? In other words, let's don't work against them. Let's work with them. And let's don't cause, you know, ask God to kind of work in spite of us. But what if we could kind of develop? So in the early development of our ministry model, we tried to develop a ministry model that took into consideration those five things. So consequently, the five things are answers to some specific questions that we get from time to time. And depending on what area in the church you work in, you'll get these questions more often than others. If you work in groups, you get these questions a lot. Perhaps if you work in Wombaland, you get them less frequently. But what I want to do real quickly is I want to talk, and I don't expect you to remember all of this. We'll make this available or I'll put the notes out there or whatever. But I just want to kind of give you my view on how the five things answer some frequently asked questions as it relates to the church. And here are five questions. Again, you don't need to write this down. Here are five questions, and I want to go through and answer these as it relates to the five things. One of the questions that we get oftentimes is, what is your discipleship model? And that's usually asked by very mature believers who are coming to the church. You know, what's your spiritual growth paradigm, or what's your spiritual development model, or what's your discipleship model? Another question that's more common is, what's next? What's next for my kids? What's next for me? We've been coming for a while. We're kind of doing everything. You know, what's next? Another question we might get is, what does it mean to have a growing relationship with Christ? Or what does it mean to grow in Christ? Or what do you mean when you talk about having a relationship with Christ? Kind of a common question. Then one that we actually love to hear is, what about all these new Christians? How do they grow? What about all these new Christians, Andy? And in spiritual development world, there's this, you know, what about all these new Christians? So, you know, we get that question. That's a good question. Then the last one, what do you have for mature believers? Or basically, you know, what do you have for me? You know, how am I supposed to grow? I've been a Christian a long time, and Andy, those sermons are nice, and I've heard all that before, and, you know, I can kind of think my way through the book of Acts and, you know, the horsemen of Revelation, and, what do you have for me? Because this seems to be a church for the young people, and this seems to be a church for people who are new Christians. You know, what do you have for me? So I feel like the five things at least address, if not answer, some of those questions. Or other, you may not hear them ask in that same way, but it's sort of the, what about the new people? What about the old people? You know, what's next? What is, you know, what is your discipleship model, your spiritual growth development? So I want to answer those questions as it relates to or within the context of the five things. But before I do that, I want to make a couple of statements about spiritual growth in general. And depending on what kind of church you came out of or what your church background was, the whole idea of growing spiritually, that may be new phraseology. If you grew up Catholic or Episcopal, or if you grew up in the kind of Methodist church that a lot of my family grew up in, the whole idea of spiritual growth or spiritual development, it was never, ever discussed. So when we just casually say, oh, we're leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ, I have friends now that you might as well be speaking a different language, because growing, relationship, leading, none of those words are a part of what they grew up with when it came to religion or church or spirituality. So let me kind of drill down on some of those terms for just a second, then I'll answer these questions. I think this is part of what we're going to put on the screen. Spiritual growth, and we talked about this in the series, is faith growth. That's what's really growing when we talk about a growing relationship. That is continual growth in one's confidence in God. So when we talk about spiritual development, we're talking about a developing confidence in God, that I can trust God no matter what. I can trust God with these circumstances. I can trust God when I don't understand. When I can't, you know, see his hand, I just trust. It's just a growing faith in God. So that's sort of the essence of spiritual growth. Number four, this means that spiritual development is more circular than linear. Now, this is really important. In fact, right before this meeting, I went through these notes with our leadership team to make sure I wasn't missing anything. And one of the things that came up in our discussion was they feel like that oftentimes people come to our church, and when they ask the question, what's next, they're looking for something that's in a sequence. You know, I did this and I did this. Now I need to know what I should do next. What's the next step? And they're thinking in terms of sort of this linear progression of, and if they're Catholic, you know, if you grew up in the Catholic Church, there's things you do. Then you go through confirmation. Then after confirmation, most people oftentimes leave the Catholic Church. But there's sort of these steps that you take, or there are sacraments that you take, or there are classes that you take, or there's just sort of the next step. So consequently, there's a tendency to think very linearly if you think at all about spiritual development. Our model thinks more in terms of cycles or circles. And the reason that is because we're talking primarily about a relationship. And if you're married, and if you've been married for any length of time, you'll know that as time goes by, the nature of your relationship changes and your relationship matures. Relationships are not linear. Relationships are not next step, next step, next step. Relationships are shaped by time, and relationships are shaped by experience. And our relationship with God is the very same way. So to try to sync up or to line up a spiritual relationship in terms of steps, not only is it not intuitive, we think oftentimes it's counterproductive, because there's a sense in which a person thinks, well, since I've taken these steps, therefore I'm in some sort of good standing with God. And last night in our community group, we have a couple who both of them grew up in the Catholic Church, and we're going through these the five things. And it's so funny to listen to them try to match their growing up experience in the Catholic Church with these five things. And they're very open about it, and it's very funny. And they talked about this last night growing up, that it was all about doing certain things. And once you've done certain things, you just assume a certain standing with God. And then we come along and say, no, it's not about that at all. It's all about a relationship, which means it's don't to think linearly or next steps or what's next or what's the next thing for me. It really doesn't match up with the nature of a relationship. So consequently, our approach to spiritual growth, or how we approach things here, is more cyclical. It's circular. It's circular because as we experience different seasons in our life, faith takes on new expressions. As we experience different seasons in life, our faith expressions are going to take on different expressions. All five things are experienced differently at different stages of life. Now, I want to give you some examples of that and see if you can follow along with this. If you grew up in church, remember when you first became a Christian? If you became a Christian as a child, if you can think back, remember what your faith was like? It was, you know, we just refer to it as childlike faith. You just, you know, mom said it, dad said it, the preacher said it, the Sunday school teacher said it, you saw it on flannel graph, and you just accepted it. And you know what? That was a step of faith. But it's a different kind of faith than you have now. So if spiritual development is the development of faith, then you can see how seasons of life, not sort of some sort of linear progression, seasons of life would impact your faith. If you were a Christian when you first started dating, and you struggled with issues of morality or issues of how far is too far, issues of, you know, what's right and what's wrong, that was a faith struggle. Can I trust God in my relationships? Can I trust God? That was a faith struggle. But that didn't happen until you got into a certain point in your spiritual development. If at 7 years old you had taken a class, and then at 8 you took the next class, and at 9 you took the next class, and at 10 you took the next class, and 11 and 12, and by the time you're 12 years old, you'd taken all the classes, and somebody would have said, you've taken all the classes, you are spiritually mature, and then you hit puberty and started dating, you would feel like you went all the way back to the beginning. Why? Because you're at a different season of life, and the nature of the faith struggle changes with each season. You had freshman in college faith, some of you lost your faith freshman in college. You just sort of left it at home, and you know, you did that when you were at home. That was a faith issue, and that season of life impacted your faith. Parenting faith, whole different level of faith. Aging faith, as people get older and begin to deal with different kinds of issues, suddenly their faith takes on a different face. All of a sudden, they're asking questions they've never asked before. I remember the first time a few years ago when I read Ecclesiastes, and I thought, I like this book. And for years before that, I would read the book of Ecclesiastes and think, why is this even in the Bible? I don't think this is inspired. This is like a big, dark, black hole that Solomon has pushed me off into, and it doesn't line up with anything Jesus says. And then I reached a different season in life, and I read the book of Ecclesiastes and say, wow, I can relate to this. What happened? I'm at a different season, which means my expression and experience of faith is going to be different, which means my relationship with God is going to be a little bit different. God hasn't changed. I've changed. But again, What happens is in each season of life, each of the five things, whether it's the way you do your spiritual disciplines, whether it's the way that you interpret experiences, whether it's the way that you develop relationships, all of these things change and they go round and round and round, and all five of these things are experienced differently, different seasons of life. The other illustration I wrote down is if you took a mission trip, how many of you took like some sort of mission trip when you were in high school? Just see your hands. Okay. How many of you who just raised your hand have also taken a mission trip as an adult? Yeah. Isn't it true that your experience and how you prepared for and your concerns and fears about two similar environments were different at 17 and, say, at 30 or 40 years old? When you were a teenager, all you thought about was you. Now, when I prepare for a mission trip, my primary concern is my family. When I was 17 and went on a mission trip, I never once prayed, God, please take care of mom and dad at home while I'm gone. I pray that no one has an accident. I pray that, you know, I pray I'm so worried about my parents. I never thought about my parents. My faith struggle at 16 or 17 on a mission trip had nothing to do with anyone but me. Now, at this level in life, I pray differently. Why? God hasn't changed. I'm at a different season of life. I have a different faith struggle, but it's still a question of, do I trust God? How much confidence can I have in God? Am I going to take this time to do this kind of thing? Same with money. Money is such a big thing God uses to grow our faith. Your struggle with how you're going to trust, if you're going to trust God with your money at 12 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, it's different every single time because you're at a different season. The issue is the same. The thing that God's using is the same, but your experience is different at different stages of life. So again, having taken five or six spiritual development classes by the time you're 20 would in no way impact your experience and how you experience these five things at different seasons of life. So it's just like watching a child grow up. There are some things you can't rush. There are things that take time, and maturity comes with time. In fact, time is an essential ingredient of any kind of maturity, whether you're talking about a tree, crops, or children. So consequently, spiritual development is the same way. So when we think about the five things, the reason they're so important is because these five things will always be a part of our spiritual development, but they will be experienced differently at different seasons, in our different seasons of life. The next thing is, it's another reason why it's circular rather than linear, is because our expressions in expressions of faith in God change in accordance to our experiences in life. And this is a little bit different than seasons in life. I've met people, as you have, who chronologically may be half your age or half my age, but who I feel like their faith is far superior to mine because of an experience they've had. They were forced because of experience to trust God with something I've never been forced to trust God with. And when I talk to these people and listen to their stories, I just feel like I'm dwarfed by the magnitude and the strength of their faith. And they would say, the reason I have such faith in God is not because of a class, it's not because of a sermon, it's because I faced a crisis. You know, my parents went through something, my brother was killed in a motorcycle accident, we lost a child early on, whatever it might be, and that pivotal circumstance did something so extraordinary to their faith that they just took a quantum leap in terms of their confidence in God. Well, that's not linear. In fact, you might say that's out of order. No, wait a minute. That's not. You'd only had the first two classes, and then you had this big. God should have waited and done that after. You know, well, life doesn't work that way. Relationships don't work that way. So consequently, because we have different experiences at different times, these five things take on different significance every time. As you know, we've just had two really difficult. We've had three really difficult funerals this year, as it relates to staff. You know, two staff members and then a child. Very, very, very difficult. And as you interface with family members of those families or any families that you know that have faced a funeral, there are verses of Scripture and there are stories in the Scripture that have taken on brand new significance for those families. Verses that they read in the past and it was just like, yeah, 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 whatever. Oh, yeah, I read that psalm. Oh, yeah, I had to memorize that. Oh, yeah, Lazarus, right? We know, you know. Suddenly, a life experience takes those passages and those verses and they are larger than life. Why? Because spiritual development's not linear. It's a circle. It's circular. It has a lot to do with seasons of life, but also the experiences of life. So consequently, it's far better, we think, to think to develop a spiritual growth model that's not about a sequence of things, but about being cognizant of these five things, doing everything we can to engage in these five things, whether it's our spiritual disciplines, making sure we're in the right kinds of relationships, continuing to serve and being available to God, in terms of life experiences, trying to be in relationships that where people can come along beside us and help us interpret life experiences, being aware of these five things and knowing that for the rest of our life, God is going to use these five things to develop us, but we're going to experience them differently because of different seasons of life and also because of the different experiences in life. One of the things I wrote down in my notes is this, that the strength of untested faith is unknown. That you and I really don't know how strong our faith is until it's tested. And to assume that there's a strength or maturity of faith based on knowledge alone or based on, you know, I've been in church for, that's not the right test of faith. The real test of faith is what happens under pressure. Trials test our faith. The other thing I wrote in my note, these two things together, are that temptations test our faith. Isn't it true that it was a lot easier to be devoted and believe in Jesus before adolescence? And it was just easy. But suddenly at adolescence, there's a whole new level of temptation. First time, if some of you moved to Atlanta and you're away from home and you're in this culture all by yourself, brand new level of temptation. The first time you had extra money, brand new level of temptation. The first time that you were alone and had extra freedom, brand new level of temptation. And temptation is a test of faith. That's all temptation is. It's, will I trust that God has, you know, his best for me? Can I trust God? Can I trust God? So again, since trials in life and temptations in life develop our faith, those are things that can't be sequenced, they can't be planned, they can't be orchestrated. They're just things that we experience. All that to say, because of somewhat the randomness of life and the seasons of life that we can't control, we think it's a better model to develop a spiritual development model around those realities than to think linearly. So last thing. So the five things are answers to the following questions. So I'm going to give you some questions and then give you my answer to these. And again, these are things that you can consume at whatever level you think is necessary for you. These are things you may want to go back and look at as people ask you these questions. But here's how I think the five things answer those questions I gave you at the beginning. First question is, what is your discipleship model? And my answer to that is that our discipleship model is three pursuits. To pursue intimacy with God, community with insiders, and influence with outsiders. Here's our whole discipleship model. It's three pursuits. It's not three classes. It's not three stages. It's not some sort of linear thing. Our whole discipleship model is this. We encourage and equip people to pursue intimacy with God. That means every single day you go after God with all your heart and mind. That means you serve. That means you give. That means you engage in spiritual disciplines. Intimacy with God, community with insiders. That means you stay plugged in and relationally, because relationships is one thing God uses to grow your faith. And if you're plugged into the right kinds of relationships, when you hit difficult times or tough temptations, there's somebody there to help you process. And then leveraging your relationships with outsiders. So it's community with insiders, intimacy with God, community with insiders, influence with outsiders. That is our model. Now, you know, yeah, but it's sort of what do I do? That's it. If you are pursuing intimacy with God, if you are pursuing community with insiders, and if you are pursuing and asking God to help you leverage your influence with outsiders, that's all we want you to do. And we feel like our responsibility as a church is to encourage and to equip you to do that, and to create environments where you are encouraged and equipped to do that. And our tension points in our model are, where are there gaps that we could do a better job in encouraging and equipping adults and teenagers and children to do that. So that's it. I wrote my notes. Pursuing those three positions a person to engage in or intersect with the five things. But even that is somewhat circular or cyclical. The second question is, what's next? So when people say, well, what's next? And the answer is, well, I want you to get in a group. I want you to serve on a team. We want you to leverage your influence. That's what's next every time. We want you to get in a group. I'm in a group. I want you to serve on a team. Serving on a team. I want you to leverage your influence. Well, what's after that? Well, there's not an after that. But you know what? Every few years, each of those three things is going to look different. And every few years, each of those three things is going to impact your faith in a different way. We just want you to stay in those contexts, and then God, over time, is going to grow your faith. Why? Because of the seasons of life and because of circumstances of life. In my notes, I wrote this. If when people ask us this question, they're asking a different kind of question. If the what's next is, I want to know more, if it's more of a knowledge thing and a Bible study thing as opposed to just a growth thing, then we're continuing to develop answers to that question, BTCL and Theopraxis that we have for leaders right now. We're going to try to figure out ways to open that up. So if somebody comes to you and says, I want to know more, not simply a what's next in terms of spiritual growth, but I want to know more, we're continuing to figure out answers to that question because fortunately, we have a group of people in our church that are very hungry for more information, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a great thing. They're hungry for, you know, quote, more in-depth Bible study or more specific kinds of Bible study. So we want to continue to answer that question, and we never want to turn that off or turn people away and say, well, you know, we don't have anything for you. But for the general person who's saying, you know, what's next? You know, I'm in a group and I'm serving and I'm leveraging my relationships. We go, that's it. Because we think spiritual growth is about those three pursuits. And if you're in those three pursuits, just relax, enjoy yourself. And we think over time, God will leverage those three things and those five things to grow your faith. Next question is, what about all the new Christians? And my tongue-in-cheek answer, first answer is they seem to be getting along fine. You know, when people come to me and say, what about all the new Christians? And I go, well, they seem to be doing fine. They're coming and growing. A little more serious answer. The second one is, which one are you referring to? And I literally ask this question because sometimes our more mature believers come to me in a panic, like, what about all these new Christians? And there's all this concern and they're so worried about the new Christians. And I say, now, which one are you talking about? Because if we're talking about a group, I don't have an answer. But if you know of a specific new Christian that needs us to do something for them, let's talk about that person because I can tell you about some new Christians. We've got a guy in our group who's a new Christian. I can tell you how he's doing. I know some people who've been coming for 3 or 4 years that when I first met them, they were new Christians. I can tell you how they're doing. But before we get into a big discussion about, oh my gosh, what's next for all the new Christians, which one are you talking about? That's kind of changes the, and I don't mean to be smart, I'm just trying to help some of our mature believers take a deep breath and bring them to this third answer, which is this. What do you owe your spiritual maturity? In other words, before we talk about all these new Christians and what's going to happen to the new Christians, let me ask you, you're a mature believer, I would say, to what do you owe your spiritual maturity? How did you get to become so spiritually mature? And if they tell you their story, they're going to talk about, well, I started going to this church, and then I met this person, and then I learned to have a, I'm going, exactly. You got to where you are over time. You don't look at a four-year-old and get in their face and say, why aren't you six? What's wrong with you? You don't say to a 13-year-old, why aren't you 21? That's, you can't rush that. Maturity takes time, so we can't address that. That's just going to happen. And we believe that over time, if we expose people to these things, if we as mature believers continue to pursue intimacy with God, community with insiders, influence with outsiders, and continue to serve, then we don't need to, quote, worry so much about new believers because we are continuing to create environments where over time, as God works in their hearts, they can grow. Then the last question is, what do you have for mature believers? And the answer is we have opportunities to pour your life into those who are less mature. That's what we have for you. What do you have for me? We have opportunities for you to pour your life into those that are less mature. Well, and some of you have these conversations. Yeah, but, you know, I want more Bible study or I want, you know, and recently I wrote a long letter to one of our leaders who just felt like we needed to have a different kind of worship service. Somebody who's been here a long time. They have served in almost every area. They felt like we needed a different kind of church service on Sunday morning for the mature believers that was, you know, deeper and more exegetical and all that stuff. And I wrote, it was actually an email, and I wrote him a nice long letter back. I said, you know better than this. You do, there is nothing you need to know that you don't already know how to get the information for. If you can type and have access to the internet, you can get answers to every single question you have. The last thing you need is to sit in a exegetical verse by verse. Let's delve into the depths of Ephesians and go one half a verse a week, you know, for the next 12 years. I said, that is the last thing you need. But I'll tell you what we need. We need you and your wife investing in the lives of these new believers that come in and need, you know, models and need mentors. And he wrote me back and said, you're right. I don't know what I was thinking. And I know what he was thinking. I bet you anything. I didn't ask him this. I bet you anything he got in a little nag-nag group with a bunch of mature Christians, and they started talking about how they didn't like, and Andy doesn't, and what's wrong. And they appointed him to be the person to email me the letter. I guarantee you. And I love this guy. Great guy. He's been an MTR. But he just sort of needed a, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. This isn't about more information. More information didn't make me mature. It was all these other things. So what we have for him and his wife is this. You can quote me on this. You can say, you know what? You may never, ever, ever learn anything new from Andy for the rest of your life. That's okay. That if it's all about you need to go somewhere where you can learn more, the great news is there are books, there's the internet, there are classes, there are seminars, there's seminary. If you think somehow because you're so mature you need more information, the good news is in the United States of America, it is all available to you. But in terms of what is our answer to the question of what's next and what do we have for mature believers, it's simple. We have endless opportunities for you to pour your mature life back into the lives of those who aren't as mature. That's our answer to the question. And we don't apologize for that. If you read any of the Reveal study, one of the things they talked about was the importance of mature believers becoming self-feeders. That's different than being a bottom feeder, you know, but a self-feeder is someone who you're not dependent on the pastor every Sunday or the class every Sunday. You've learned to have a quiet time. You've learned to research. You've learned to get answers to questions. And the point of being a mature believer is that you are a self-feeder. In our meeting before this meeting, David McDaniel made a great point. He said that in every other discipline in life, people become self-feeders. That over time, people who are great at selling insurance, they're not dependent on people who are better insurance salesmen than them. They have become the experts. In the field of medicine, there are people that, you know, they went to medical school and they went to graduate school and they did all that. But over time, they are constant learners and they're self-feeders. And if you were to say to those people, well, who feeds you? They would look at you like, feeds me? Feeds me. Yeah, I have learned to be a self-feeder. Well, in every arena of life, that's what happens. In fact, in your area, many of you are at the top of your game in terms of your field. And if I were to say to some of you, well, where do you go to get greater insight about preschool ministry? You would say, well, I don't really go. I just learn from them and I learn from him and I went to this. You are a self-feeder. You have learned to become better at what you do by getting the information you need. Well, the same is true in spiritual development. At some point, we all become self-feeders. That's the goal. So to the person who is there and says to us, church, what do you have for us? We say, we have opportunities for you to pour your life into other people. That's what we have. We have a lot of those opportunities. That's our answer to the question. Why? Because according to the five things that God uses to grow your faith, that's the model. It's not just about more information. It's about serving. It's about looking at life through the grid of God's word as you experience unexpected things. And it's about those other three things. So that's our answer for that. Last thing I wrote on my notes is you don't need more information. All the information you need is available to you, and you know where to find it. We believe that mature believers ultimately are self-feeders. So that's just kind of an overview of how important I think these five things are, because they do address some of the questions that we get over and over about spiritual development, spiritual growth, both for people who are new and people who've been around for a long time.